I'm Gen Z, compulsive gambler, multi-addict human being, and English. I assume we have people here from all over the world. It's one of the best things in the Hine Street meeting that I chair is we have people. I think we have people from Gambia, Hong Kong, and Sydney, Sweden, and multiple other places. Hello, Barrett. In fact, I was here September the 22nd, September 2022, and Barrett introduced me back then, so I haven't forgotten it, and it's great to have that connection. I just wanted to start with some thank yous to all those that give service tonight. To my wee friend Claire, for inviting me to share. It's always a privilege to invest time in recovery, so thank you for giving me this opportunity, and to all the people that are here. When we started, there were only about 12 people, and I thought, oh, this is not so daunting. And now there's 33. So just hoping that I can give something that's relatable. And just know that coming to a meeting, I've never ever felt worse after a meeting. I know this will be helpful for me, and I just hope that you get something out of it. So when thinking about what to share tonight, I was inspired by my girlfriend, not for the first time, and a challenge she's been facing recently. To cut a long story short, because I know Dan will tell me I've done 20 minutes, she is part of an institution that bought another institution. When they merged, her counterpart got the head of role, and at the time she was angry. But she showed maturity, she showed patience, she showed just unbelievable poise. And I'm pleased to say that yesterday she was going for an interview for that job. And I'm not here to regulate anybody but myself, but we'll leave it at the fact that the other person's been fired. But why is this all relevant? She was feeling very nervous about speaking at the interview in front of five people. And I said to her, there are two people in that meeting that you know are on your side. And so why did that inspire me? Because frankly, she had 40% of the crowd definitely on her side. And I would hope to think that I've got 100% of the people here tonight on my side or on our side, because this is a unity program. We are equal, we all share a common addiction. And I love the fact that there is a forum like this where we can share safely and provide the unconditional love that, frankly, I didn't get for a very long time and still working on that resentment along with others. But it's a really, truly beautiful thing. And so, for anyone that's freshly into recovery, welcome. You're in the right place. Keep coming back. And for those that continue to be friends of mine, and hopefully there are some new ones this evening, just thank you and keep being you, because you're truly special. In the Orange Book, it asks the question, is knowing why we gambled important? And it says no, or not as a rule, I think. We call it Orange Book. People in America, I think it's yellow. Cheryl probably will nod if it is, or others. But it made me think, because I realized in preparing for tonight, and this is the beauty about investing time in recovery, because you realize new things that you can learn, that the reasons why I gambled in the first place were very different from the reasons why I kept gambling, and absolutely different from the reasons that stopped me from gambling just for today. The reasons I started gambling were predominantly based on ego. It'd be very easy for me to sit here and talk about suicide attempts or sexual abuse that I suffered, or mum and dad getting divorced, or not getting love and bullying and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not meaning to skirt over that, because they were things that were traumatic and they still have resonance when it comes to how I behave, how I look at myself, and how I manage situations. But the reality is, being a victim or indulging in self-pity isn't going to help me in my recovery. And if I'm really, truly honest with myself, it was about ego. It was about thinking I knew best. It was about looking for a quick fix or an answer. It could be about money, although it's not a financial problem. It was a false sense of pride and a power that was totally illusory. It wasn't real. And that's why I started. Why did I keep on gambling? Because I'm an addict. I'm a compulsive gambler. When I start gambling on tennis, because I knew quite a lot about tennis, and I mean that not to deceive myself in thinking it's worthwhile betting on tennis now, but I kept gambling because I didn't know how to stop. And tennis soon became Venezuelan female volleyball at 4 in the morning and playing blackjack and betting on God knows what. And it was because I couldn't stop. It then became a almost masochistic version of self-harm, where the guilt and the shame and the pain that I knew I was causing others and myself was addictive in itself. And I felt like there was no way out. When you don't want to do something, you're telling people you don't want to do something, you can't afford to do something, you can see the damage, but you still do it. It cripples you. I should speak for myself. It crippled me. And the level of self-worth that I ended up having was borderline non-existent. I came into the rooms in 2014 in February, but my last bet's July 31st, 2015. So to anyone that thinks one meeting's going to solve every problem, sometimes it does. And so I'm very proud and delighted for people that it does. For me, I relapsed multiple times before the penny dropped. I had to get to new lows. I had to suffer more pain. But as I'm going to go on to in a little bit, I'm just grateful that I came back and kept fighting, because the life that I have today, whilst absolutely not perfect for many reasons, is a life that's so much better than when I was gambling. And what kept me from gambling, or what keeps me from gambling today, is obviously going to meetings. There are many tools, but I would also say, on an emotional level, fear. I'm absolutely petrified. If I make one bet, I know that that's not going to be where it ends. And that scares the out of me, conscious of the profanity thing we said before. But that fear, that self-worth that I didn't have when I was gambling, that I've built up over 10 years of abstinence, or 10 years plus, helps me understand and believe that I can, whilst not gamble properly, I can control my urges to stop me from thinking that that's the solution. There's no time I've been broken a leg or a thumb, as some of the people on the High Street meeting know recently when I played cricket. No doctor told me, well, gambling is going to solve your problem. It won't. And it won't solve any emotional problem I have. It won't solve any problem in life. And for that recognition and acceptance of that, I'm very grateful. So instead of indulging in something that was going to be progressively and aggressively bad for my health, self-esteem, mental state of mind, and everyone connected with me in my life, who I genuinely love, I'm just grateful for the program. And to celebrate 10 years, in July this year, I was invited by beautiful Cheryl, who I remember when she walked in on the 31st of October 2021, something like that, invited me to share at a Glasgow meeting, which I will advertise, not for, I don't think we're allowed to advertise, but it's a great meeting, just as this one is, on a Sunday. And she asked me to speak, and I decided for 10 years I've come up with 10 tools that I've learned in recovery, or observed in recovery, that have helped me. There are 10. I could ne mention 100, but I thought I'd share them this evening with you, and hopefully some of them will resonate and keep me on time, Dan. How long have I gone on for so far? 10 minutes? Is it we can, okay, number one, acceptance. I am a compulsive gambler. I wouldn't say I'm proud to be a compulsive gambler, but I'm proud to accept I'm a compulsive gambler, and I have no issue in telling anyone I know that I'm a compulsive gambler. It's not easy when you're maybe one day, 1 hour from being a compulsive gambler. But trust me when I say that for me, acceptance was the starting point. Without that acceptance that I have no control, I'd never be able to fully surrender, do my step one and address the issue. I remember when my mum said, "It's great that you've gone to meetings because you realized you were a compulsive gambler." No, mum, I realized a long time ago. I read the 20 questions at the back of the book. I answered 19 of them with yes. I just didn't want to deal with it. I was in complete denial and thought I knew best. But accepting that I have no control over it has been the starting point of moving forward. Number two, recognizing there's a very big difference between humiliating myself and humbling myself. The sense of ego, power, control that was so both attractive but also damaging through action was in many ways a extension, and I don't mean this to look for pity or sympathy, but having suffered abuse, I didn't have control over that situation. And I felt in some ways that my dirty little secret in gambling was in my control because it was my secret and because it was something that no one else was impacting. It was my decision to do all of those things. And that led me to feel like humiliating myself through staying in action was the appropriate punishment, or it was pain that I deserved. That's not true. I don't deserve to do that to myself, but I do need to stay humble. I can't sit here and say after 10 years, I'm fixed. I'm not. It's a daily program, and if I don't come to meetings like this and continue practicing recovery and the right, trying to do the best thing, then I won't be able to get there. And so maintaining a level of humility and listening to others and knowing that I'm not the arbiter of the universe, I can always learn and not just can learn, but want to learn from others and be inspired is something that has massively advanced my recovery. Connected to that is number three, which is I am worthy of love. That's not me inviting you all to say, "I love you, Jeansy." It's just recognizing that I'm not a bad person. I don't wake up in the morning and decide to be a bad person again, conscious of profanity. But what I do try is to do my best. It's a beautiful privilege to sit here and, invest in step 12. And I don't take that for granted, but I also don't take others' love for granted. But I know that if I do the right things, there are people out there that will give me the unconditional love I didn't get in my childhood or through periods of difficulty, or indeed not even giving to myself in action. And I'm very grateful for that. And the level of connection on a human basis that I get in these meetings is so pure and beautiful, and it's something that is unparalleled, and I'm very grateful for that. Number four, practicing gratitude. Well, I think I said thanks to the people giving service for this meeting. So there's two off my list today. But it's very difficult when in action to feel grateful for anything because life is on top of you. But when I started, I decided to write a gratitude list. And initially, there were, I think, five things on it, which were I was grateful to have a shower, grateful to go to a meeting, grateful to write a gratitude list in itself. And I think there were two others which escaped me now. But I also remember through writing gratitude lists that when I stopped or when I missed a day, I used to get furious with myself that, "Oh God, why have I missed a day?" And then before you know it, it's 2 days, or I've missed 2 days now. And that shame and guilt, the same shame and guilt I had when I was gambling and thinking, "Oh, why did I do that?" stopped me from writing a gratitude list. Well, investing time with my sponsor recently, and in a beautiful conversation I had with someone that I'm trying to help in the program, I said, "Do you know what? Stuff it. I'm going to write a gratitude list again." And for the last 10 days or however long it's been, that's really helped me in my recovery. It reminds me the tools are there. We learn it in the program. You just need to keep doing it. So I would advise or remind anyone that's thinking of things to be grateful for. Well, I'm grateful for having you in this meeting and for the opportunity to share. So that's at least one thing. And I'm definitely grateful for not gambling today. Number five, simply meetings make it. I've never been to a meeting where I felt worse afterwards. Is it always easy? No. Is it nice to confess and be open about things? No. As someone that didn't tell anyone that I'd been abused for 18 years, I can't tell you how good I felt when I eventually told someone. I couldn't control the fact they said, "Well, what about me?" But that's for another day. It still didn't detract from the sense of honesty and integrity with myself, that is beautiful when I've been deceiving myself in action for 10 years gambling. Number six, living in the day. Easier said than done. I still get annoyed with things that have happened a long time ago. In step work, I've realized I have a lot of resentment towards my parents for either the love they didn't give me or I didn't feel that they gave me, to, of course, the people that wronged me. For life itself, as an Arsenal fan, why are the referees against us? But it's not about that. That's not going to help anyone. It's certainly not going to help myself. But being able to live in the day, but I would caveat that with not just living in the day and living in the moment, but giving myself an opportunity to pause. As an addict, I'm quite reactionary. I struggle to deal with difficult emotions without looking for a way to escape, looking for a way to numb that pain or forget about it. But thank you. But we acknowledge, I think, as we say in NA as well, I'm in that one too. I think it is possible though, and through coming to meetings, through realizing this too shall pass, as my good friend Andrew says, it can happen. But knowing that if you can get through that moment and through that day, that's another thing to be grateful for. And as we say, it is just for today. I've kind of gone ahead of myself. Number seven was going to be having power over not the emotions I feel, but the reactions that I take. One of the best things I've ever heard in a meeting was the following. One of the best things about recovery is feeling your feelings, but one of the worst things about recovery is feeling your feelings. And that's always stuck with me, because when you open yourself to feel the emotions, or when I've opened myself to feel the emotion, it is uncomfortable. But I acknowledge as well that it's truly unrealistic for me to expect not to feel anger or pain or hurt or grief. But as one of my friends on this meeting that I can see said, there's a difference between pain and suffering, and it's about distinguishing between that and knowing how to forgive myself, knowing how to process emotions and difficult negative emotions without looking for an escape, and investing time in realizing what my triggers are and trying to deal with them more appropriately. Number eight, just setting own goals. And if that is just not gambling in the day, so be it. But being realistic, and not expecting to be perfect. I'm a perfectionist, which is very counterproductive as an addict, because it's just not possible. And realizing it's about progress, not perfection, is a big part of my recovery. Number nine, nearly there, Dan. Being kind to myself. I would like to think I'm kind to other people. And even someone the other day that said, "You're amazing, Jeansy, you're a superstar." And I said, "I wish I saw myself like that. I'd far rather be an altruist and be a people pleaser and look for the joy I can give to others. But in recovery, I have to save some space to be nice to myself." That means forgiving myself. That means knowing that I'm doing my best. And it means just being real and being human, because none of us are perfect, but we're all here tonight. And that's an amazing thing. And we should celebrate that as well. And lastly, just keep fighting. I've now been nearly a year without a job. And that is soul destroying in many ways. But I've got three interviews this week. I had four last week. And when it would be easy to say, "I'll just give up, I'm not going to." And that's something that I've learned. And whilst employing, that's a poor choice of word, whilst using in my search for employment, it's something I've learned in the recovery. And this is a recovery program that is transient across all of our life, all of mine. That's what I wanted to say. I just think that without putting recovery first, none of the things that I want to do in life are achievable. None of the opportunities to meet fantastic people like yourselves and to be honest and to be humble would be there for me. And I'm just filled with gratitude for being invited tonight and just hope some of that landed. So thank you, Jeansy Compulsive Gambler, and I'll be back.
Thank you so much, Jeansy. Took a lot from that, especially your wee list of tools. That's stuff that I probably wouldn't have put down as tools. Totally relate to the whole job situation because I'm in the same boat. And I have wanted to give up. But I'm the same. I've got a couple of interviews coming up soon. And the only other thing is, I wouldn't admit to being an Arsenal supporter. But thank you so much. We'll open up the room to some comments and questions. And Mark, you're the first one to put your hand up. And you come.
Thanks, Claire. I'm allowed to come on video. Don't let me do that. Anyway, Jamesy, great to listen to you. Great to meet you. What an absolutely clearly articulated share, and just the number of things you covered in 20 minutes. And I hear you said you had 10 years. I know what a trick it can be to condense, quite a period of time, and obviously all the years before that, into a 20-minute share. But it was almost like you were verbally writing as you spoke a piece of literature for us all to keep. And now that it's recorded, we'll have it. The 10 points. Yeah, every single one of them. Every single one of them. But clearly you have to do the self-reflection to condense them and to get clarity around them. And it was interesting that so many of them are, one thing versus another, humiliation versus humility. And it was great. What I really liked was the way that you started with the three, sets of reasons. Reasons that led you to gamble, reasons you continued to gamble, and reasons today that keep you from gambling one day at a time. That was fascinating. That just I could really relate to that. The insanity, all the kind of reasons for me was all about, oh, I want some excitement. I want to learn. I'm interested in all this gameplay. It's, oh, look, people can win money and, I could get good at this. And I remember going out in the late 80s and buying every book I could find on blackjack because I was going to be the blackjack guy. And then so many years later, I'm at a casino. It's 4:30 in the morning. I should have left 8 hours ago. People are waiting for me at home. They've no idea where I am. I want to go. I'm working again in about 4 hours' time. I want to sleep, but there's still chips on the table in front of me. And the insanity is, I'll go as soon as I've lost this because there wasn't any way I was getting out the room. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this is crazy. That was the only way that I was going to get out of that casino was either lose every penny or they close the doors. And that's when I know I've lost all control. But do you know what? I'd love to come up with a question, but you were so comprehensive. Actually, it's as if I've got to know you in the space of 20 minutes. So thank you so much. For sharing with us. It was And yeah, I hope to come across you again, and I'll certainly be re-listening to this recording. Thanks for being here tonight and sharing that. Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. This is why I love these meetings, because I think there's nothing more beautiful I feel in life than feeling connected. And the reality is that in gambling, I was disconnecting not just from myself, but from others. And hearing your story and knowing that I've been there with blackjack, and we've all been there in whichever guise. And that's when you're in action, you feel like does no one get it? And what you get in coming to meetings is, I'm not the only one. I'm not alone. There are people that can talk. There are people that might make more sense of it. But also each day, each meeting, I go to different meetings, and I would advocate it's very comfortable going to the same meeting. I can be guilty of that as well, I have to admit. But that's why I was so looking forward to tonight, because I'll get to hear new people. And there was someone that came on last night at the Hind Street meeting I've chaired since COVID. And I love hearing new people's stories, because it just keeps me active and aware. And the minute I start saying to myself, I don't need to hear anyone else, or don't need to feel that connection, is the moment I know that's complacency. That's me thinking I know the answers, and I don't. So thank you. And yeah, God bless.
Thank you. We'll go over tomorrow.
Thank you. Gingy knows me. And
Yes.
I'll go to his Hinckley, I think it's Hinckley meeting. I just two things I want to say as a comment. The first thing is things get a bit too much in my head. I think about like philosophy and go crazy of God and everything. So today I thought of a tactic. I was a baby once. I said I put a pacifier in your mouth, pretend it's a pacifier, and just lie down and try not to worry about everything. Just lie down and go to sleep, or just don't worry. The world, anything could happen. But when you're a baby, and it's bliss, and it's just a wonderful feeling, be baby-like. It's just a wonderful feeling. As a tactic I use when things get too much, I like being advanced in that and learning in that. But sometimes you can think, overthink, and worry and troubles. Another thing I want to share is what was it again? I can't think. I forgot. And with our past, thank you.
Thank you, Mo. Am I right, Claire? Am I supposed to say something? Because
It's
I'd
up to
like,
you, Jindy.
you know what I'm like. I've been told once in meetings that comments are bad, but the reason why I make comments after everyone's share at Hind Street is very simple. It's not because I feel that people want to hear me. It's that I want the person that's shared to know that they've been heard. Because I think in my life, I've experienced that sense of why is no one listening? Does no one realize, or does am I invisible? And so for me, also when, as I think I shared before, when I told someone for the first time, anyone in my entire life, that I'd suffered sexual abuse, and they said, "But what about me?" I thought, "Hold on a sec, this is not the response I'm looking for right now." Whilst I can't control that, I always want people to know they've been heard. But Mo, you made me think of something. I often say, I think too much. And doesn't that say it all? And that kind of chaos that's in my head of you've got one side and the other and wrong and right, and should I do this, should I not? All I would say is that in the context of recovery, there are two things that if you work a program, and if and when I'm working the program, I've noticed. Number one, there's such beautiful freedom and clarity of thought when I'm not gambling. Am I totally free? Do I see everything easily? No, but it's certainly a lot easier than when I was in action. And the other thing that I think I'm learning a lot more at the moment in step work, and I'm nowhere near where I want to be, but it's progress, not perfection, is the ability to let things go and the ability to hand things over. As an addict, I always want to be in control. And convincing myself or trusting myself that there's someone out there that's going to be guiding me doesn't come naturally. I think a lot of people struggle with that. I certainly do. There's nothing wrong with that. But that level of spirituality is something that I hope to enjoy more through step work. So that's one of my goals this year. So I'll keep at it. Ben, thank you for your share, mate.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. Jeans, I just want to say you're so eloquent. I don't see how you're not hired yet, but that's me. But thank you. I'm a compulsive gambler, Patrick. 3 weeks tomorrow since I placed a bet. And I'm happy with that. I will say that I had a weak moment yesterday. I didn't do anything wrong or put a gamble. It's amazing how you can talk yourself into, oh, what's going to hurt? But when is it does? So obviously, I'm preaching to the choir here. But initially, I'm going, okay, I can do this. I can do this. And then I'm flopping back to the bad behavior from before. But I appreciate everybody's candor. It really, really helps. And everything you're describing of pulling away from the table when you should, then all that affirmative. Yeah, it's happened to me too. I think gambling was supposedly filling a hole in my life, but it wasn't, obviously. But a couple more things. Just have to remember what a priest told me in confession, several years ago. And you're not supposed to talk about confession outside of confession, kind of like Fight Club. But point is, count your blessings and remember the good in yourself. Remember going into that confessional saying, oh, I don't have this, I don't have that, blah, 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 blah. There's a great response by that guy. I'll take it. And it's not like I'm ultra-religious and I go to confession a ton, but touch of blessings. It's something I say to a lot of people. But and finally, I love the comment about feelings. I always say myself, like the good news is I can feel my feelings. The bad news is I can feel my feelings. But I'm hoping I've bottomed out and I'm on the upswing. But that's really it. Jeansy, well done. If you need a reference, I'm kidding, but like
No, please.
really, no, I have faith. But thank you. This was very cathartic.
Thank you, Pat. Well done on 3 weeks. And first, I mean, that's why I love these meetings. I don't know, Claire, what the limit time is. We can go for 3 hours as far as I'm concerned because it's time well spent. But Pat, thank you for your share. Well done on 3 weeks. A couple of things I just want to say. Number one, we're equal. Don't absolutely don't matter if I'm 10 years and you're three. This isn't a competition. This is a unity program where we're all trying to do the same thing, which is just not gamble today. And the minute I start thinking, oh well, okay, I'm fine because I've done 10 years, then I'm no better than someone that's been one day. And so that's an important message. It also serves a purpose that I once said this in a meeting recently. There was someone that I think was 44 years clean. And I said something that might not have seemed logical, which was, I don't want to be 44 years clean. Well, clearly, I want to get to 44 years clean, but I don't want to be 44 years clean today because that means that I won't have all the lessons that I'm going to learn in the next 34 years, God willing, a day at a time. And everything that we go through in recovery, it's not linear, it's not just A to B. You need those ups, you need those downs. I'm not suggesting that we test ourselves. That's something that we advise against in the literature. But it will all serve a purpose if we acknowledge that as an addict, we accept that we're an addict and that we struggle with dealing with XYZ. So, whether it's today, tomorrow, or in 3 years, or whatever it might be, just know that you're in the right place. And last point, because I did this in step work recently. And by the way, for the record, anyone that thinks that there's just one way of doing GA, I have a sponsor for 7 years. I would highly recommend it now, in retrospect, but I'm not going to get angry with myself for not having had one for the first 7 years, because that doesn't serve a purpose. But we were reading step five the other day, or sorry, step four. And something that's worth noting is that it says obviously that you want to look at characteristics such as selfishness, self-pity, jealousy, self-deception. There's a long list. But it also does say immediately afterwards that it is equally important, however, in the acknowledgement of all one's positive characteristics such as friendliness, optimism, empathy, industriousness, humility, etc. If people are looking for literature, we can share it. But it's so important to have a fair barometer by which we assess ourselves. And the minute we start getting really angry with ourselves, it leads into self-pity and shame and guilt and all those things that for me personally led me into a moment of, well, then F it, I'm going to go and punish myself. That doesn't mean giving ourselves excuses just to act like wankers. I got so far through the meeting without cursing, sorry. It does mean that we need to be fair and honest with ourselves, and that's what I would advocate. And sorry for my profanity.
Thank you. I believe it's Bennett that would like to come in next.
Oh, yay. Thanks for
Okay.
being here.
Thanks. I'm a very compulsive gambler. Nice to see you, TNC. It's currently very early where I'm at because I'm in Sydney at the moment. So actually, so nice to listen to you again. And I don't remember what you said the last time because it's a few years ago. But I really like, as Mark, what you said about why is it important? It's not why we gamble important, because for me that has been important. And I actually do like your explanation. So Andy's sitting next to me. He's actually one of the trustees. And they sort of have this opportunity to change the wordings in the comic books. And I think this would be a brilliant one. I haven't spoken to him yet, but he obviously will hear what I'm saying to you. So, because your explanation was so spot on, because you split it into three parts, and that actually resonates with me as well. So grateful for that. And another thing that I might be fearful of after this speech, the Heinz Rieck meeting will face an invasion of people from all over the world. Oh. How, who is that Chinzi? What to him more of him and yeah, and the regular, yeah, they won't be able to speak for several months. I don't know. Like to see you, and also what I do like about you, Chinzi, is your vulnerability, your ability to say, this is my truth for today. Don't sugarcoat anything. And sometimes you tend to have too long comments, but you're aware of it yourself. So, yeah. See you when I'm back in Sweden again.
Well, thank you, Barrett. I'm glad that you managed to get to Sydney. And the reality is, honestly, the bit about why we gambled, I only realised it this week. It was the first time I'd ever considered it, and it's that's why it serves a purpose to invest in our recovery, because you can realise things like that. And I was so grateful. I messaged Claire immediately and said, "I've just realised something," and then I messaged my sponsor. But the only thing I would say is, yes, I split it into three parts: why I gambled in the first place, why I kept gambling, but what's stopping me from keeping gambling. And what I wrote down in my prep, but I think I forgot to say, is that of those three, the one that is more important than any, or is the only important one, is what has kept me from gambling. And so, yes, it does help to understand, and I'm someone that always looks to try and understand myself, but I don't need to do that if I just remember that gambling is a source of misery and pain, and it will take me back to a place I just don't want to be. But thank you for your share, and I will keep my comment to a minimum. Tack.
Thank you. We'll go over to Benjamin.
Hello.
Hi, thank you,
Oh,
Connie.
yeah. Hi, Jeansy. That was great. My name's Benjamin, recovering compulsive gambler. And I guess so I've been on the program since March of this year. And although like right now I'm not gambling, I'm really struggling with the self worth aspect of recovery. I didn't realize how little I thought of myself until I started trying to seek recovery. And even as I say that, I can hear a voice in my head like, kind of get over yourself, figure it out. And I guess that my question to you would be, I don't know. I'm just struggling with that part of recovery, and maybe your initial steps to tackling the self-worth problem, like the situation I put myself and my family into, in trying to kind of forgive myself a little bit. Yeah, I don't want to be a punching bag to myself every day, I guess. I guess that's all I got to say. And Mark, good to see you. I always love hearing you speak. One of the wisest people I've met in this program. So, anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Ben. It takes a lot of courage to be. I struggle being brutally honest with myself, and it's a self-perpetuating cycle where I feel that I deserve to punish myself because I've done something wrong or been dishonest, and I really struggled with forgiving myself. That was one of the biggest challenges in recovery. And the one thing I would say that helped more than anything was acceptance that I was an addict and that I had no control. But what helped me most associated with that was trying to put it into real, trying to have a parallel with that. And I've shared it on the Hind Street, but I'll share it here tonight. I am one of the world's worst artists. I can't draw a straight line. I can't. I'm colorblind, apart from anything, but I'm also just awful at it. And I have a twin sister. And when people used to come around to my house, my mum used to. We had our paintings on the wall. I think she did it just to wind me up. But she used to, when people came over, she used to say, "Look at the paintings. See if you can guess which ones Rebecca did, who's my twin sister, and guess which ones James did." And of course, there's an elephant I've tried to draw that looks more like a rhino, and everyone could tell. Why am I bringing that up? What is he talking about? I'm bringing it up because I accept that I'm a bad artist. I accept that I have no future when it comes to becoming an artist, wanting to invest time in that. But also, I have no shame about it. As an addict, that's something that is so often stigmatized, and we feel like it makes us a bad person. By reaching a level of acceptance in which we just accept and just surrender and say, okay, that's something that we can't do. Doesn't make me a bad person, but I know that if I do it, I will be a bad person. That gave me a freedom to forgive myself and go, what I need to do today is to focus on my recovery because I am a good bloke. I know I have love to give, and it's about today. And as weird as that might have sounded, I hope that did make sense. And please, no one ask me to do some art because honestly, you will not be appreciative of it. But I wish you well, Ben. And if you ever want to talk, come to Hind Street on a Monday. Or otherwise.
Thank you. We'll go over to Phil next.
Yeah, hello there. My name is Phil, a compulsive gambler.
Hey, man.
Morning. Thanks for your share. I perked up when I heard you're a gooner as well. I have been since 1985, which is probably just before I started gambling. back in the UK on the fruit machines. I'm sitting here in Sydney, and just as I was thinking of sharing about being an Arsenal fan, I saw Andy sitting there in his Manchester United shirt. So I know Andy as well. But,
see, I missed that.
Yeah, like I thought, is that Manu or Wales? And then I realised. So, look, I had to put Spurs on my resentment list. I worked in other fellowships because I used to get so angry about football results that at times it would drive me to do all sorts of different things. And in the second time of doing the steps, it was Spurs, I suppose, as what are they, the people, places, things, the things. So I can have resentments at almost anything that sort of ticks the box for it. I'm just 75 days at the moment after 13 years in GA. Keep coming back, have bits of time up, mainly, I think, through just being in other fellowships. The good and bad problem is that because I have that time up, great things happen. You know, the promises start to work, but then I gamble and I put myself back to square one in aspects of my life. And that's sort of where I've got to in the last few months. And you know, being in Australia, everything's all wrapped up in the superannuation system, the stock market, and my form of gambling the last 10 years has been markets, stock markets. And so it's quite, you know, like I'm hoping the problem be removed from me so that I'm obsessing about money all the time. It's just this bloody money obsession. So I've got a sponsor now. I sort of share with him to get those thoughts out of my mind. I turn it, hand it over, third step prayer, the whole lot, just to try and get some sort of sense of calm back into my mind. And it sort of, you know, and I know it works from doing it previously and coming onto meetings. I try and share daily to help to, get out of what is inside me at that particular time and sort of where I am in my recovery. It's two or three meetings a day online, back to my AA home group. I've reconnected with people there, which is great. They do not want me gambling in any form. It's funny how people sit there, though, in AA in the after meeting and talk about the stock market, and they can do that. And I'm like, oh, I'll have to leave this conversation if it's all the same. So, it's where, where I am. But, you know, there's no point comparing, you know, what I have with others. We're all different and I've just got to work through it. And some aspects are probably better off than them and some they're better off than me. And that's how it works. I will never know. Sober today. And thanks for sharing. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil. North London is red. And I hadn't seen Andy's shirt because all I can see is Barrett's name there. Now I've noticed it, I'm going to have to let go of that resentment. But I'm not going to say anything more on that. Listen, well done on 75 days. As someone that's a multi-addict, and this is a program of honesty, I relapsed on drugs in the past, what are we talking, 2-3 years, I would say. And that's something that I found very challenging when it came to then going, well, who am I then to sit in front of and chair a GA meeting when I'm in action on something else? And that there was a level of guilt there that really made me struggle with that psychologically. But the only remedy to that is going to my NA meetings. It's being open and honest and accepting it and talking about it in a meeting like this. The minute I try and hide something like that, that isn't going to serve any purpose. I know you said you went back to square one and I'm not here to regulate. All I would say is, because I like giving love to people, the 13 years that you've been in the program, you'll have learned a hell of a lot to what I said before. So, I mean, the experiences and the journey will be the journey, but it's about looking for those similarities, not the differences. And finally, I have the utmost respect for people that let me frame that better. I have a lot of empathy for people that are gambling or trying to recover from gambling, rather, that have connections to investments, because it's not as simple as I remove all myself and then there's nothing there, in the same way that people that go to Overeaters Anonymous, you can't just not eat food. So it makes that pretty difficult to balance. But I just would advocate sharing, going to meetings, and just keep doing what you're doing, because it was a privilege listening to you, and I'm just very grateful for your honesty. And I did wonder with an English accent why there was sun, but now you said you're in Australia, that makes sense. So good day.
Thank you. We'll go over to Patricia.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Jinsi, for your share. My question is, I'm not sure that you ever relapsed during recovery. If you ever relapse, I mean, if you didn't want to relapse, what was the factor that you turned yourself away from gambling other than calling somebody? And I want to ask more question. We all need a dopamine high, natural high happy. What about you? What kind of a dopamine high that good enough, I mean, high enough to replace going, having a casino high? Because casino high is, I heard that is way more than, you having a pleasant experience in daily life. And how long does it take for that kind of a habit take over that you don't think about going to casino? Thank you.
You're on mute, Gen Z.
Great. Chaired a Zoom meeting for 5 years and still do that. But just for today, I'm not perfect. Right. Fantastic questions, Patricia. Thank you for your share. With regards to relapse, so I came into the rooms February 2014, and my last bet's July 31st, 2015. In the period in between of 14 months, honestly, I can't remember how many relapses I had. I remember certain difficult conversations I had to have with mum and dad, and going back to the meetings with my tail between my legs. What stopped me from relapsing again? A level that I'm very fortunate in the Hind Street meeting. There are, it's interesting I say they are, not they were, but there are people that have been 20, 21 years, 19 years, 18 years. And I think in meetings, you get a combination. The meetings that I like are the ones where you have someone that's one day and someone that's 20 years, because that's what it's about being an addict. It's about hearing, and in meetings, about hearing the pain that reminds you of what it's like out there, and the inspiration that it is possible. Because when you first come into meetings, I can only talk for myself. I certainly thought, I don't have any self-belief. I'm here because, well, I'm willing to take any advice. Just, is there an answer? Because I haven't found one. But humbling myself to think, well, let's give this a go. But by keeping coming back and not giving up and going, I'm sure those guys have talked about relapse before. So they've managed to then become 14 years. So why not? Let's just keep listening to them. And it really is possible. I get angry when people say, addicts, there's no hope, there's no chance of becoming clean or not gambling. There absolutely is. That's nonsense. There is nothing you cannot do as an addict. Nothing. There is no reason that this has to take over your life. That's not to say that it can't or won't, but trust me when I say there is definitely hope. With regards to dopamine, well, you've seen me vaping, but also when it comes to the question of why do I also smoke, because I can't figure out which one I want to do more. But when it comes to the dopamine hit, I used to manage the mental health agenda for a company, and I did a speech once about my daily dose, because it was either dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, or endorphins, I think. So I was always looking for some kind of a hit. But the dopamine that I felt when I was gambling, I don't know whether it was more the risk that I enjoyed when I was placing a bet, was probably even more exciting than the risk, the reward when I won. There were times when I once deliberately left late to go to work because I liked the challenge of seeing if I could still get in on time. That's insane. No one, no, that doesn't make any sense. I'm reasonably academic and got straight A stars and multiple ways at A level, and I still think that's a good thing to do. That's insane. But I guarantee you, the dopamine and the sense of connection and joy, and I feel being in this meeting and knowing that together we're making a difference, far outweighs any joy I got from gambling. So it's about reframing the mind. It's about reconnecting. I think connection is one of the biggest things. I know there's someone who's been 20 years clean in my Hind Street meeting who thinks he's a plagiarist, but I read a book by Johan Harry called Lost Connections. And that was something that gave me a little frame of, in terms of looking for connections, whether that's connecting with the natural world, whether it's connecting with humans, whether it's connecting with ourselves. There are so many other books you can read, but everyone finds something that connects with them. But literally, connection is something that gives me more dopamine than anything else. And you get more connection by being vulnerable, by being honest, by doing things that you never thought you could, and by realizing there are other people that can empathize with you. So if you're looking for a hit, connect. And being here and listening to people and going, they get it. That's the first hit you'll get. So I wish you luck.
Thank you. We'll go over to Steve.
Steve C. I am a compulsive gambler. Came into the rooms April 15th, 2025, and I don't believe I've ever been to this room, but I understand now why I did. I see a lot of faces I know from other platforms, other rooms, but G and Z, thank you, man. Thank you. I'm the king of abstinence so far. That's all I can lay claim to is step one. I keep throwing up roadblocks to get me through step two because I just don't want to face it, man. But before I totally lose track, I may be an American, I may be on the East Coast, but Arsenal is my club, gentlemen, and it's just always nice to find a fellow sufferer. All right, that said, I just want to thank you. I want to thank this room for existing. I want to thank the people who made this happen. I want to thank whoever invited Gene Z. I want to thank all the faces and names that I know in this room. Utterly stuck, giving in, relying on another addiction to keep myself going. And you know what? I've been excusing it as grace. So screwed up how our minds work. Because I am it may be knocking on 6 months in the program, 7.5 months since the last physical bet, but my mind is still doing the same stuff, and I'm still seeking the same escapism. And thank God I'm not betting because my first bet is my last breathing moment. I know where it brings me, and I know I'll go right back there. And because my personality defects are capable of going 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, and I'm usually 8 miles down the road by the time I even realize it happened. And it's just great to hear my story on someone else's lips. It's great to know that other people's hope, other people's faith, other people in the program who have paved the road for folks like me. It's just nice to know that even with my particular issues and what's going on, still not unique, still not special. This is still doable. I just got to figure it out. And I'm terrified. I have been a cannabis addict for knocking on 50 years. Started very young, and it is how I survived. Oh shit! Pardon my French. now it's in the way. First time I've admitted to this ever.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, I'm gonna take a break. I'm going to thank you for being open. Thank y'all for being here. Didn't know how badly I needed this meeting. Just another coincidence I can't explain that points to a power higher than me that I gotta find. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Steve. Oh, you'll get me going. I said to Claire when she invited me that, and I think I said to Dan at the beginning, he said, "Thank you for your service." And I said, "It's my pleasure and it's my privilege." And it's having and setting and creating an environment where someone like you, Steve, can feel comfortable to open up. And if that's the first time you've said that in 50 years, I think that's amazing. And I think I'm just grateful that you felt comfortable to do that in front of me. So thank you. I learned in NA there's a disease of forgetfulness, and God am I proof of that. If I think it was what 7 years when I've been 7 years gamble free, and then I decide that there's something else that can answer my problems, or anesthetize me, or however you want to put it. But all I'd say is that just don't give up. And every meeting I hear a phrase that I think, God, isn't that beautiful? And I think you said, isn't it's nice to hear my story on someone else's lips, and that will stay with me, because I think that was so beautifully put. So thank you, and know that you're special and you're not alone. So thank you, Steve.
Thank you. We'll go over to Andy now.
Hi, Andy. Can we, Barrett, sort your shirt out, please?
Yeah, my name's Andy. I'm a compulsive gambler and alcoholic.
Thank you, Andy.
Just on the United stuff, I mean, I stopped drinking in January 86 and stopped gambling in July 86. And in between those two, Liverpool did the double. And I thought, well, if I can cope with that, I can cope with anything. And I have because of this program. But the main thing I was going to talk about was that thing that Barrett mentioned, that is knowing why we gambled important. And I remember someone saying at a meeting, if you want to know why you gambled, it's pretty straightforward. Don't go to meetings. Don't talk to anyone in the fellowship. Don't do anything about recovery. And see what it's like in 6 months' time. Then you'll know why you gambled. And yeah, I find there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, beyond the stopping gambling, to stay stopped, to me, is where the recovery program comes in and stuff I need there. But also, just on that thing there, I can remember I got to GA, went to my first meeting in May 86, stopped, as I said before, in July. In between those two, in those 2 months, there was a World Cup in Mexico, and England played Portugal, and this was the days before internet, et cetera, et cetera. And I would ring up the ABC out in Australia to get the results of games, because how else do you get the results? And I can remember ringing up, can you give me the score from England versus Portugal? They says, oh, Portugal won 1-0. And I just put the phone down and said, that's it. I'm off to gamble at lunchtime. And then I thought, what's that question? Is do arguments, disappointments, or frustrations create within you an urge to gamble? I never thought that. And England losing football is not really that important. I mean, I like them to win, but I wouldn't have thought that affected my mood. And then I started thinking of, my mood gets affected if I'm doing some complex calculation at work and the phone rings and I get interrupted, or someone says, or there's someone in front of me at the bus, or. And I thought there'll be 20 of those things a day, just as bad as England losing. I thought, yeah, that's why I couldn't stop gambling. There's 20 triggers a day to mainly gamble. I don't notice it, but in recovery, being able to see that, do something about it, that's to me what the program's about. And as I said, that thing there is knowing why we gambled important. It's not important for stopping. In fact, I don't think people can stop and can know why they gambled before they stop. It's when stopping and then the stuff comes up and having to deal with it or go back to gambling. And it's dealing with it that's the hard bit. And that's where some kind of higher power, some kind of a god is required to help me through that. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you, Andy. And in the spirit of forgiveness, I'm not here to judge or regulate any Man United fans. As I love what you said in terms of, whether you were happy, you said, I mean, fundamentally, I'd create any excuse, whether I was happy, horny, tired, sad, depressed, euphoric, it doesn't matter. I'd find some rationale to justify to myself that gambling was the right answer, but that's the delusion and the dream world and the fantasy that I was living in when in action. And to your point, I think one of the things that I really have learned through recovery, and there are days when it goes better than others, but when it's the more, it's the ability to make more sense of what people in the meetings are saying. Because at first, sometimes they say things you think, I don't get that. And it makes more and more sense. And one of the things that has made much more sense as my recovery's grown is there is a big difference between abstinence and recovery. And staying stopped and it is one thing, but knowing why you stayed stopped, having the tools to stay stopped, and investing in a program that you acknowledge is fundamental to you staying stopped is what is the most precious thing that GA can give. So thank you for bringing light to that, and congratulations on so 39 years. Oh, there's a big one next year, God willing, one day at a time. Congratulations to that.
Thank you. We'll go over to Jennifer.
Hi, thank you so much. I will make this fast. You must be getting weary. I'm Jen, I'm a compulsive gambler, day 228, since I placed a bet. I'm so grateful. First of all, I'm full of gratitude today because I was in Gamblers Anonymous in personal meetings and from 2002 to about 2020. And I probably talked to maybe 5 to 10 people in total that over that time in the program. And having these Zooms available lets me hear people like you from far, far away to share your story. And it makes me realize, number one, it's such a bigger thing than just me. It's not inside me. I don't control this. So therefore, I don't have any control over this issue. It shows me that there's so many people everywhere that have this addiction. And I thank you for that. Also, it's just such a great gift to have these rooms, and I'll forever be grateful. Thank you for your share. Thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. Well done on 228 days. I'm grateful for Zoom, and weirdly, not the only weird thing I'll say today, but I'm grateful for COVID. When has anyone ever said that on a Zoom meeting? Why? Because when the physical meetings stopped, we at Hind Street, and it wasn't just me, so this is an anonymous program, so I'll call him someone that begins with R, the people that on this meeting that know him. Well, no, we said we've got to try and make a meeting. We've got to try and give a facility for people to connect. And we did. And I'm very grateful and proud. It's not false pride. Genuinely proud to say that we have a meeting now that is consistent, that's well attended, that gives that platform that people deserve, because we all deserve a chance. And it's these rooms and Zoom or Teams or whatever it is that gives us a chance to do that, because knowing you're not alone is so helpful when you first start in recovery, and also in continuing to give you a platform to share. So for that, I'm grateful, and thank you for your share.
I'll go over to Georgia.
Thank you. I am Georgia.
Hi, Georgia.
Hi. Thank you for your share. Very on point, and thank you for all the shares. It brought out a lot for Georgia. And what brought for most is I just came out from a moment and how alone I am, and yet I have my higher power, and I need a physical pain when I just need that hug. I just need that connection. The rooms is one thing, and I didn't realize it until moments ago that I can work hard all I like, right? All I need to do in the rooms and do recovery, read the book, put into action. And then this is where it comes selfish, right? The selfishness of me where, I have no desire to gamble. It's that inside of me where I had hurt so much, and when I stay still, I it's that it's just it's not about what I've done to myself, because I know what I did, right? It's in the moments, the stillness where what about me? What about me? I'm going through all this work, and the stillness is the one that, when I allow myself to cry, not of pity, but just of the inner self, my soul that was journeying for so long, that was pushed down inside of me. What does, I've heard it many times, keep coming back, and I get, I don't know if, well, now going to come up because of my ego gets in the way of just keep coming back, just call me. And sometimes people just don't understand. It's that just doesn't understand. And because there's just more to life than just talking. I live in a place where there's a gambling, physically gamble place that's every Tuesday nights, and it's testosterone, and I can't continue to do that because there's the resentments, right? There's a lot of ego, and I don't know where I'm going with this. I guess I gotta go to the ocean, or go out in the mountains or something and hug the trees or something. Being a great grandmother today is just a different way of life, a different way of living. And I don't bring it up with my children or my grandchildren because it's not their fault. It stops with me. But that inside of the low, just that self-esteem, like I can go here, and then one time I just crash, boom, and like everything just like, can somebody just carry me? Just carry me. Just tell me everything will be okay. And but with that being said, what a wonderful share. Straight on cue, straight on point, coming in with fullness, with gratitude, with work that you've done over the 10 years. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Georgia. I know it won't be everything that's needed, but I am sending a virtual hug. Also, please know, it's a program of honesty. I don't mind admitting that I have a lot of teddy bears for someone that is 38 years old. And I have them because probably growing up, well, no one else was talking to me, so I talked to them, and it turns out that they agreed with me. At 38, that's probably a little bit more alarming to admit. I've just remembered I've told my girlfriend she could listen to this, and she's going to say there's bloody teddy bears because they've been moved now to a different room because she gets jealous of them. I've just made that worse. But I think sitting with feelings is one of the hardest things to do in recovery. Having finding things to do with your free time, because I spent so much bloody time gambling, I didn't know. Now I've got all this time on my hands, what am I going to do? Sleep, that's a big one, because I didn't do sleep when I was gambling. I couldn't sleep because of the stress, and I decided to give myself more time to gamble because that was the best thing that my stupid mind convinced me to do. But looking for love, but knowing that you're worthy of love, as I think I said in one of the 10 points, is important. And I'm conscious of time, but I also empathise with what you said in terms of living alone. I'm My dad is 83 at the moment and is struggling with thinking that he deserves me to come round to look after him, or essentially wanting to live or not. And the only thing I have learnt from recovery that I can try and share with him is that I want him to know that he's heard and I respect him, and however he feels is valid, because I'm not going to try and change how he feels, but that he isn't alone. At least not if physically he's not alone emotionally, and that he can always talk and share if he's struggling with something. So I wish you well, and
Thank you.
maybe
Thank you. I don't
hang on
want
to load. Tell you about, I'll get there's loads of them over here. I blame my mum. There's a resentment. She set me up with loads of them at her house. Anyway, who's next?
There's nobody else with their hands up. Is there anybody else that would like to come in before I end the meeting?
My teddy bear's available, but he's just going to say what I said, so.
Quickly then, Moa.
Thank you, Gen Z. Look, I'm alive and I want to reach the acme, and for me that's love to all people, and that I feel like I'm in heaven. I'm nice to everyone thanks to the program. It talks about character defect, and I read the whole of the dictionary, and I've been many things, depressed, angry, all that. And so I'll just be a nice person. Love people, care for people, kind to people, and I take care of myself. I have to. I don't want to be suffering. So that if I die tomorrow, I'll be happy because I live life right. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. Hey, Henry.
Hello, everyone. Henry B, compulsive gambler, no gambling to report. I haven't gambled for many years, and most importantly, I haven't gambled so far today. I'm in California. It's good to see some familiar faces. Good to see you, Mark. I haven't seen you lately. And good to see my old pal, Andy. I hope to see you here on 20 September to celebrate our friend Dennis' 30th anniversary. Anyway, Jinsey, I tell you, I've heard lots of great speaker meeting, the way you articulate, the way you present. I'm so happy to be here. I got lucky today. I got a text from my friend Don from San Diego meeting, and I jumped in as soon as I saw the text, and I'm so glad. It's an honor to meet you. It's a privilege to meet you, and I hope to see you more often. We'd love to hear more from you. And all is well with me. I'm doing well, and I'll see you all soon. Thank you, Claire, for hosting a great meeting. And of course, my buddy Dan and Tony for keeping the room safe. So have a lovely day, everybody. Have a lovely evening, wherever in the world you are. I wish you all well. Stay well. Love you all.
Thank you, Henry. The privilege is all mine, because you gave me an opportunity to share, and I know that's going to help me. And it might sound controversial, but sometimes the thing that I did in action is put everyone else first and not me, because I felt that I didn't deserve love. And I still need to give everyone else love, but it doesn't mean I can't leave some space to give myself some too. So thank you for helping me as much as hopefully I've helped you.
Thank you. We'll go over to Victoria.
I am Victoria, compulsive gambler. Last bet October 12, 2024. I have a question. I would like to know, because through the years of gambling, and even though being in GA for so many years and being able to get like a year, 2, 5 years, and then relapse again, but just the amount of damage I done to myself And that I came to the point where I was afraid of myself. I was in fear of myself that I saw any person from the street, any homeless person who, if I bring them in, they will do less damage than I would do. I mean, the amount of damage I done to myself that no one in my life done that. I mean, considerably. And also lost relationships because of the lost relationships, going into darkness with from the higher power, and damaged relationships with myself. But I used to use people because people been a tool for me to get the resources so I can keep gambling, so I can draw and I can use whatever I have available to feed my addiction. But I didn't, I just lost so many relationships, and I just lost the ability of that genuine deep connection with people. So I would like to know, what is your experience of restoring the relationship with yourself and with people and gaining trust?
Thank you, Victoria. What a great question. So my relationship with myself is still to this day up and down. Even in recovery, I struggle with self-worth. I struggle with thinking, looking for approval, looking for love. What I would say is that all of that is available in the program. I'm not saying that I share because I want your approval. I need to approve of myself. You need to, it's that classic adage of you need to love yourself before someone you can love someone else. But I think the connection, because relationship and connection are pretty synonymous. I mean, the relationship with myself, the relationship with reality, the relationship with love, and the relationship with healthy and positive outlooks on life is only enabled by the program in the same way that I deceived myself in action that I needed to exploit relationships to enable my addiction. There's a lovely phrase I've heard in the past that is, addiction is giving up everything for one thing, and recovery is giving up one thing for everything. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And it's not sort of all, it's not, there's not one simple answer. What I would say is the steps and the program and listening to others has helped me to look at ways that I can manage different parts of recovery because my relationship with myself is one thing I need to look at. My relationship with an addiction is another, but also how you live life because you have to meet life on life's terms. But even being in recovery is not going to stop things happening that I resent or disagree with or find difficult. What recovery will do is help me to manage that. And the serenity that we talk about in the prayer is being acceptant and acknowledging the fact that there are certain things I can control and certain things I can't. I can't control myself, the fact that I'm a gambler. I accept that. And in fact, actually, that acceptance enables me to forgive, and that forgiveness enables me to build self-worth. So I can't build self-worth unless I have an acceptance of who I am. And I can't forgive myself until I've accepted who I am. So I would say, in terms of my relationship with self, probably acceptance is the starting point. In terms of how I manage everything else, I'm still learning. I don't have all the answers. If I thought I had all the answers, I'd be lying to you and I'd be deceiving myself. But by listening to others and the wisdom that there is in these rooms, it gives me a shot at it. And will I be perfect? No. But it's about progress, not perfection. And embracing that and knowing that we're doing the right things and going in the right direction, which is far preferable to the inevitability of what would happen if I were to gamble. I hope that makes sense. I would also say that it requires a lot of patience. It's very easy to get an easy hit by eating a donut from the fridge. It'll take you a lot longer to get a six pack by going to the gym. Recovery is not dissimilar to that. The strength you build takes time. It is one day at a time. Other snacks are available, not just donuts.
I think I would prefer the donuts, Gen Z, to be honest.
I like donuts. I'm starving right now. I'm going to have some ice cream after this to indulge.
I just want to thank everybody for being here. Thanks to Gen Z for coming along and speaking.